Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our next guest is the Democrat running for New York State Senate in the 54th Senate District. It's Shauna O'Toole. As always, we invite all the candidates that are on the ballot. And in this case, you'll hear me mention it several times in this conversation. We invited both candidates, the Democrat Shauna O'Toole, the Republican Pam Helming. The Republican is the incumbent in this race. She did not respond to our request for an interview or a conversation. But Shauna O'Toole did, and you might have first heard Shauna O'Toole on this program in recent years as a trans activist, also a small business person, and now someone who wants to be in the New York State Senate, serving the people from Albany. Shauna O'Toole, welcome back to Connections.
Thank you very much. How are you today?
Well, good, and thanks for making the time for the program. This is your third run for office. First was back in 2015 against Rich Funke for the 55th District. Second was in 2017, as I understand it, against Helming. This time around, what's the main motivating factor for you to decide to run for office again?
Well, back in 2017, they had a candidate they already had liked who had run previously, so I stepped aside for him. And this time, I'm running because I'm seeing how things are in this area, and I think we need a new approach, a new vision for how things should be approached. I'm a working class woman. You know, I'm not a professional politician. I will claim that one. I'm going in to do a job, and that's to represent the 54th. 254,459 people that live here, if I recall correctly. And we need a different approach. Instead of looking at blaming the governor for taking too much power, I think we need to be thanking him for saving thousands of lives. I think we need to take a look at helping our small businesses, our small and mid-sized farms. And I don't see that happening.
Let's talk about a wide range of those issues here. First of all, you have been a technician and engineer with Eastman Kodak. You were a high school science teacher. Tell me about how you think your work background has informed how you would work in Albany.
What I would bring would be a science background. I think it's something that may not be the strongest card suite that's there right now in Albany. I can talk about the sciences around the environment. I can listen, I can understand, I can ask questions, I can have a conversation that someone who is an attorney may not be able to have, not because they don't want to, but they may not understand the sciences behind it. And so I think that's part of the perspective there that I would bring. I was an earth science teacher, and I used my background in meteorology and climatology for much of my industrial work. And so I can use that to help inform my federal legislators, this is what the science means.
Okay. Now, when it comes to the science of this pandemic, you've already offered some praise for the governor. Your view is that the state has handled this pretty well. So let's talk about this from two different perspectives. What grade would you give New York State's handling of this pandemic on the health level, the public health level, and on the economy level when it comes to making sure that the restrictions are appropriate but not too onerous for business? How do you grade both sides of that?
I would give New York State an A for the health. It doesn't mean I agree with everything. I think there were a few things we could have done better, so it's not an A+. You know, especially in terms of nursing homes, and there have been a lot of concerns around that, and I think those are justifiable concerns. In terms of helping make it through this pandemic as we went through the shutdown, I would probably give us a B, maybe a... Yeah, no, let's go here with the B. I'm going to be a little generous. I mean, it was hard for everyone to get through. I was fortunate. I was able to stay working, but I know a lot of people weren't. I know demand on food banks have been unprecedented because of this. I think there are a lot of lessons to be learned from this and applied for the next time this happens. And there will be a next time.
What happens next, though? From the state perspective, we see cases going up again. The hope is that we're not sort of irreparably moving in that direction, that this could get under control. But there's also questions that small businesses have about surviving this coming winter. For your Senate district, what do you think people want in terms of restrictions, openness for the economy? Do they want to make changes? Do you want to see changes when it comes to what is allowed? And how do you see that going through the winter when really the dynamics of just daily life are very different?
This winter is going to be very hard. There will be an increase in cases of COVID-19 simply because people are going to be indoors. It's possible we may see some restrictions being reapplied. I think this is one area where we need to help our small businesses financially. We need help from the federal government in this regard financially to help keep small businesses open. This is territory that none of us living have really gone through. The last massive pandemic like this was the 1918 pandemic. And we need to help our small businesses financially survive this.
How do you do that, though, on the state level?
This would have to go into changing the tax structure. I know that for you and me, we both pay far too many taxes as it is. But the people who received all the federal tax benefits, you know, we're talking millionaires, ultra-millionaires, and billionaires, and there are a lot of them downstate, they can afford to pay a higher level of tax in order to help cover this. If we're able to cut some of those taxes for working middle class, we're going to spend that money locally as opposed to putting it to the bank, and that's going to help spur and keep going the economy as it is. This is not going to be easy. There's no quick Band-Aid that's going to fix all of this. This is one where we're simply going to have to help each other and be New Yorkers and work together.
Well, one of the ideas that the Democratic Party, your party, has proposed, at least in various quarters, and I know there is disagreement on this, right up to the governor, who disagrees with a super wealth tax or an ultra-millionaire's tax, but some in the Democratic Party think it is time for that, to generate more revenue, to offer more of an opportunity to help on the local level, especially with the federal government not committing yet to help states, counties, and municipalities. Do you support a super wealth tax? And if so, what does it look like?
I do support a super wealth tax. This is, I know it puts me at odds with the governor, but I'm okay with that because I know this is going to help my district. What the percentages would be, this is something where I would have to talk with tax professionals. What is it going to take? Tax professionals, income professionals, how much money do we actually need to keep this going to help get us out of this deficit hole that we're in? And let's be honest, the ultra-wealthy have tax benefits that the rest of us don't have. Yes, it may cost them a little more money, but a slight increase in tax for them is going to help everyone else. And we're the ones who actually put, you know, the economy to work here in New York State.
Talking to Sean O'Toole, a Democrat running against the Republican incumbent Senator Pam Helming in the 54th New York State Senate District. We invited both candidates. Did not hear back from Pam Helming, but did want to make sure that we offered time to those who wanted to take it. So Sean O'Toole has taken the time. This is her third run for office. And we archive all political conversations, all conversations, but especially if you're looking for conversations before you vote, WXXINews.org/connections for all election-related interviews. Now, let's talk a little bit about your priorities when it comes to green jobs and energy. You're in a district that, who knows, over the coming decades could see a significant change based on whether or not New York State really pursues heavily new forms of clean energy. And that's been heavily debated at the federal level. That's debated in New York State. The Cuomo administration wants to style itself as a national leader in this. I want to talk about what you think is realistic when it comes to climate and green energy and when certain goals can be achieved. Can you lay out some ideas for listeners on that?
What we need to start looking at is solar power. Solar power has improved dramatically over the past several decades. There are already solar power generators in this district. This is something we can add on to. Not only would it help the grid, the power grid itself, but the people who lease the land then to the power generators are going to receive an economic benefit as well. I would love to see wind go up, but I also know there are a lot of objections to wind. This is a major migratory area for wildlife, and there's a potential there for interference with that. Plus, people complain that they don't like the looks of a wind tower. Now, I'm a science geek. I look at a wind farm and I go, ooh, wow. Not everyone shares that point of view, and I respect that. But solar power within the next 15, 20 years really, really needs to start getting its foot in the door, start being able to take off the coal, natural gas power plants that we're using now, and oil power plants. Then we would cut down on the carbon dioxide levels, reduce the overall energy bills for people. I think that's the way to go.
Is there a future within the next 10 to 20 years that you can envision when we drive a car, we're not going to a gas station to fuel it? That gas stations, there's a few left, they're far flung, most people don't use them. Can you envision that in our lifetimes?
I can envision that. I can see a point where the majority of vehicles will be electric, because most people only drive a short distance. There are issues, of course, in charging and distance, but as battery technology improves and continues to improve, you're going to see longer and longer drives on a single charge. If you're doing a cross-country run, you probably won't see an electric car for that. It just won't have the range. But I can see the majority of vehicles on the road being electric.
Let's turn to healthcare, and I want to talk a little bit about what AuburnPub.com reported on your proposal for a possible partnership among New York and other states, including, say, California and Illinois, to provide low-cost health insurance. They write that the healthcare system that you propose would allow people who change jobs and move to one of the member states to keep their coverage. Tell me more about this idea and how you see healthcare in general, what changes you want to see made.
People stay in jobs nowadays because they're afraid of losing their health care. They go to a new employer, and it may take a year before you can get health care. If you have state-provided health care, I know people panic at that. They shouldn't. State-provided within the members, it's simply moving the address. It'd be like me moving from Geneva on up to Webster, but working for the same company. If it's in the same network, it should be a wash. Excuse me. And as we share the costs are going to go down. I mean, not everyone is going to be sick at the same time. So as a group, we can negotiate and get pharmaceuticals at a good price. We can drive down the overall cost of healthcare because we're all chipping in. And I don't mind chipping in if I'm being healthy, but you have some child with emphysema, lung cancer, in a different part of the state or different member state. Yeah, I don't mind chipping on in to help that child get well. I think it's part of our civic duty.
What do you generally make of the debate that seems to be endless whether it's at the state or the national level on single payer, the debate about whether it's the federal government's job to really figure out health care from the top down or whether it should be a patchwork of states coming up with their own ideas?
Well, if you look at the rest of the industrialized nations, everyone else has universal health care. Let's take a look at these models. Let's find a model that we can start offering as an option, because not everyone is going to want to move into single-payer healthcare at one time. I know that, I recognize that, I accept it. But as we start to phase that in and prices come down, I can see people leaving a for-profit health insurance company and moving to a single-payer. It's not going to be something that's going to happen overnight or in a year or 5 years. It's something that will take time. It will help all of us and becomes something that you don't have to worry about it. You don't have to worry about if you get an ambulance ride to the hospital because you broke your ankle and you suddenly end up with a $1,000 bill for the or for the ambulance ride. A lot of us here in the 54th live hand to mouth. You know, it's, we save our pennies. So every once in a while, we can buy a pizza, but money's tight. By going into a single payer, that takes a large burden off of everyone. It puts more money in people's pockets.
Well, you talk about money being tight and understanding what that feels like. Can you contrast, do you see a contrast, I should ask, between you and your opponent in this race regarding who is in touch with, you know, I hate to call it real people. All people are real people, but I mean people who are really hurting or have struggled, are struggling. Do you think that's important, and do you think there's a difference between the candidates in this race in that regard?
You know, this is one where I'm not going to be able to answer because I don't know what Senator Hellman has been doing going on now. I know I've been going to farmers markets, and talking with the people there, be it small businesses, small farmers, and talking with them and asking them, what do you need from the state? And it has shocked a lot of people that someone is asking them, as opposed to simply being told, this is what I'm doing for you. What I plan to do is, when elected, I want to meet with groups of farmers. Tell me what you need. Where do you need help to keep going? Small businesses, same thing. Small production, schools, where do you need help? Instead of me telling you what we're doing, you tell me what you need. There's been a lot of people simply sat back going, wow, no one's ever asked me that before. So that's my approach. I'm going to ask, because you can't serve unless you know what's needed.
Why are you disappointed in Senator Helming's work? I mean, where have you deeply disagreed with her?
First off, with the governor's response, we both have two totally different views on that. And she is trying to limit the power the governor has here during pandemics. I would argue against that one. I believe she is trying to put forward the idea that we should divide New York State up into different regions. And I will argue against that one as well. You know, Senator Helming is doing her job. Don't get me wrong. I'm not going to badmouth her in any sort of way, and I know you wouldn't want me to do that. But she's also someone who voted against my civil rights when JENDA came before the floor of the state Senate. She voted against JENDA.
Well, explain for listeners what that means, for those who don't know.
Okay. JENDA is the Gender Expression Non-Discrimination Act. For those who don't know, I am a lesbian trans woman. I did not have statewide equality with everyone else. The Gender Expression Non-Discrimination Act simply means I am now protected by law, just like every other New Yorker. Nothing extra, but now it's the same. as opposed to being a second-class citizen. And if she would vote against my civil rights, who else is she going to vote against?
Have you ever had a conversation with her about that, about gender and about how her votes have impacted you?
Actually, I did. Right after the vote, I went and asked Senator Helming, and we had a great conversation. And she said she wanted to broaden it on off to all women. And I listened respectfully. But the point is that what she was missing in that is that there are roughly 200,000 New Yorkers who were without any legal protection at a state level. Various cities and municipalities, yes, but not at a state level. And trying to expand it on out to be more than what it was meant to be was the wrong approach. We had a good conversation, even offered my services if she needed someone to talk with in regards to LGBTQ issues. I would love to talk with her and present, this is why we're talking about this. This is why we're looking for this sort of help. Never heard back from her on that one, but the offer was made and it was sincere. Because I believe that Senator Helming she's doing her job. I'm not going to argue with that. I think it's a different viewpoint than what I take. But she's doing her job. I think what's needed, though, is someone who is more science savvy, maybe who is able to answer some of these questions that are coming on down the pike.
Well, before I have to conclude, let me just kind of push in the direction that you've taken this interview, Shauna, because when we look at the federal level, we're likely to see a confirmation of Judge Amy Barrett to the Supreme Court. And two members of the Supreme Court, Justices Alito and Thomas, recently wrote about their opposition to the Obergefell case from 2015, which was a 5-4 Supreme Court decision in favor of equal marriage. And the justices have signaled that it's important for the Supreme Court to get another crack at that because they think it was poorly decided, unfair, and they think that's a question for the states alone. So we could see same-sex marriage sent back to the states and rejected at the federal level. We could potentially see other questions sent back to the states, obviously Roe, but others. I'm curious to know if you think that it is important for all states to be out ahead of that, thinking about what may end up back in the states' hands, taken away from federal hands, based on possible Supreme Court action, and how you see your role in the New York State Senate if you win.
I think it is important. We all need to look at this. I now, here in New York State, I know I'm protected. Even though the marriage equality law for New York State was based on sex, not gender, which meant it excluded the trans community, the agenda corrected that oversight, if you will. And all the states need to start looking at this. I mean, we're talking about a group of people who are trying to simply live our lives. You know, I'm not trying to force myself on anyone or anything like that. You know, I go to work, I pay my taxes. I, on occasion, may go on out and grab a burger with my wife. And you know, we need to start thinking about this at the state level to make sure that we can be protected at the federal level. Now, I know Joe Biden has said to a woman who asked him a question at his town hall, in regards to protecting her child who is LGBTQ. And he said, we will change the law at the federal level to make sure that we are protected. At that point, it then becomes, let's look at this. If you're not going to don't want to legislate at the court level, let's do it here with Congress and the president, just like what we did here with the Assembly, the Senate, and the governor.
Shauna,
and that becomes a role model to everyone else.
All right. Well, Shauna O'Toole is running for New York State Senate, a Democrat running against Republican Pamela Helming. Pam Helming declined our invitation to be on this program before the election. Shauna, let listeners know your website so they can learn more about where you are in the issues.
Okay. If you want, right now I am running a Facebook page. It's Shauna 4, New York Senate. They're on Facebook, or you could email me at Shauna 4, State Senate at gmail.com.
Thanks for making the time. We really appreciate it, and I know we'll talk to you after Election Day one way or the other. Thank you.
Thank you very much.